The Mid-Atlantic, nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933, and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. And hour two, kicking it off. And Jay Privman standing by. Daily Racing Form, Derby Watch. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. And I was very anxious to see the Derby Watch conversation and your Tampa recap, because this is an interesting discussion point. I had Andy Beyer on, too, to talk about the figure. Give us your take.
Regarding the figure?
Just the general performance. I mean, it feels like a performance that, you know, that some people want to pan and, you know, want to kind of relegate Classic Causeway. And, you know, then there's those that, you know, just feel like there's more to give, and we may, you know, it's too early to make a definitive call on where he shakes out.
Well, I can see elements of both. The figure is the figure. It was 84, and it was clearly based on the final times of the three and or fraction mile split fractions of the three 2-turn dirt races on the card. It was the slowest of the three, and the figure was in line with the other races, which got figures that made sense. So, you know, based on the buyer scale, the figure is low for compared to other top 3-year-olds. I was of the opinion in his previous race, the Sam Davis, that they gave him too low a figure in that race, because based on the way that race graded out, which was an 88 in Sam Davis, the second through seventh place finishers all had figures that were regressions their previous race, which seemed unlikely.
I remember when you said that now, actually, that you had a question.
So, you know, based on that, I expected a step up, and there it wasn't in this race. You know, that said, he goes along throughout the race, does Classic Causeway like he's not under any duress. You know, his ears are flicking back and forth like, you know, is anybody else out there? And then he kicks away through the stretch and, you know, wins as best. So I think there's more there, but he needs to get faster to be considered a top-ranked Derby contender, and he'll get that chance. Look, we're still, seven weeks away from the Derby, 50 days, I guess, exactly. And he'll run in the Bluegrass, and that'll be a good test because that's coming up a good race.
Agreed. And plus, it'll be a nice mix of regions, too, Jay. It feels like, you know, there's a Chinese menu coming together for the Bluegrass.
Right. I mean, you'll get Zandon will be there, Classic Causeway will be there. You know, you'll get something from Pletcher's Barn, I'm sure, will end up there. You know, McPeak will have something in there of his contenders, I would imagine. You know, so you'll get a nice mix, and you'll get tested. Because I'm a big fan of Zandon's, and I think that'll be a good test for Classic Causeway.
Ethereal Road headed that way, right?
Ethereal Road is headed there. Yeah. Well, he's. I don't. You know.
Yeah.
I don't put the runner-up to Unoho in that same category, Steve. Maybe you do. So, sorry. Why he didn't quite get mentioned there.
But horse coming in from Arkansas does, you know, just add that was my, you know, that was my, you know, theme here, that, you know, you're going to have virtually, you know, all regions represented, which is, you know, which is nice to get a taste of a read on the regions. That's part of the fun of this exercise. So behind him, really, from Saturday, anything else to worry about or think about?
You know, we put Grantham on our top 20 list, but I think he's a very tenuous one. He did get 20 points out of it, but I thought he had a pretty sweet trip overall. He's just kind of a grinding type. Doesn't really impress that much. And there's some horses that don't have any points yet that are going to be running in these final round of preps that, you know, like Chancet and potentially Messier and, We the People and Secret Oath, the filly, who are going to knock some of these horses that are barely in the top 20 right now, you know, might knock them out. I thought Shipsational ran okay. He lost a lot of ground in the race. He just never had a chance to drop over. And I think he was probably the second best horse in the race, even though he finished third, considering he took with the ground loss factored in.
As it happens, was able to grab Eddie Barker at Ocala, and Eddie's upbeat. He was not, you know, deflated by the effort. So they get to, you know, play through, play on.
Why would he be deflated by the effort?
No, I'm saying he was. I'm just.
That seems like a notion that has no possibility of being even remotely true. So I'm just, you know, that's why I'm just curious about that phraseology.
Poor choice of words. Jay, talk about Secret Oath.
So Secret Oath, you know, to me, Steve, is an interesting story just because it's, you know, it's Wayne Lucas trying to go back and run a filly in the Derby, and I went back and looked at the history of fillies in the Derby for my Derby watch piece, and in particular what's happened since the point system came into being. This is the 10th year that we've had points as the criteria as opposed to earnings, and I just think it's been kind of a fascinating development that there hasn't been a filly in the Derby since it's happened. And in fact, I looked at the rounds of final prep races, you know, the big six, I guess you'd call them, you know, the Arkansas Derby and the Bluegrass Stakes and the Santa Anita Derby, yet all those, you know, last ones, Louisiana Derby, Wood Memorial. There have been 55 races over these 9 years, because the Arkansas Derby was split into divisions 2 years ago. And out of those 55 races, there's only been one filly who's even run in one of those races, and that was Swiss Skydiver running second in the Bluegrass, which, as you remember, everything was run helter-skeltered out of order 2 years ago owing to the adjustments that needed to be made for the pandemic. So I just think it's been an interesting aspect of this that there hasn't been a filly. And one of the reasons is because under the earnings criteria, there was no allowance made for restricted races, which is what filly only races are, right? And so you could get a horse who, a filly could run by just running in filly only races. And I don't think that's fair. And one of the aspects of the point system that I like, and there's a lot of it that I like that it rewards current form as opposed to older form, because the point values increase as you get closer to the Derby. But it's made it a level playing field in terms of getting points to go in. In other words, a filly must run in one of these Road to the Derby races. You can't just get points from running in an Oaks prep. And that's one of the reasons I think you haven't seen a filly try at all very often, once in the previous 9 years, and now we'll have it twice in 10, and why they haven't even been in the Derby. But I think it's a fairer way to do it, and it'll be interesting to see if Secret Oath can step up and run a race that gets her to the Derby while having the Oaks still as a fallback position, because she's got enough points. So I just sort of tried to tie that extremely long paragraph that I just said on your show into a 850-word piece.
It's amazing, Jay, how this just galvanizes everybody's interest. It just ratchets up when you get a horse like this. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know. There's always, whenever a filly wins a big race, either like a two or early three, it's like, when's she going to run against the boys? She's going to run in the Derby. And it doesn't even matter how good some of them are, they're just always clamoring for that. And even among older horses too, you'll see it, you know, like, when are they going to run Latruska? Remember last year, that was part of her conversation, like,
that's
when are they going to run Latruska in the Classic? You know, it's like, well, the Distaff's a good goal for her too, and as it turned out, you know, it didn't work out for her. But anyway, that's always an aspect, like you just said, it's always an aspect of things that people really get intrigued by. And, you know, nobody has been more bullish about trying to do that over its career than Wayne Lucas, because every filly that he's run in the Derby has had experience against males prior to running in the Derby, going back to Winning Color, so he won the Derby with Althea and Life's Magic had both run against males multiple times before they tried the Derby, and Serena Song won the Jim Beam, as it was known back then, when it was run on dirt. It's now the Jeff Ruby on Tapita. She won that before going in the Derby. So Secret Oath is following in those footsteps in terms of getting in a prep versus males before even attempting potentially a Derby run. You know, and the other aspect of this, and I didn't mention this in the story, but I brought it up on the show when, you know, with you and Hammer a couple of weeks ago when you guys were in Arkansas. The moving of the Arkansas Derby has made this a more palatable scenario too, because
yeah,
you now have 5 weeks to recover as opposed to three, and I think that's a major aspect of a filly going in a race like the Arkansas Derby.
Absolutely, and I know Wayne, you know, in advance of the decision, the announcement, he had kind of floated that, and you know, that if it was the old date 3 weeks out, he wouldn't have considered it as seriously.
But I think he still might have considered it, right?
Exactly. You know, I don't know. The other day, Jay, I said something, and I just, your reaction regarding Lucas and his career, and obviously you've covered him for decades. when he and Stevens won with Oxbow, there was kind of a consensus or an impression that, oh, you know, what a great coda to Lucas and Stevens. If she just goes ahead with the, you know, with the Arkansas Derby and ends up contesting the Oaks, this is pretty remarkable, and it really, to me, he's somebody that, you know, that manages to, you know, to keep surprising and finding more, as it were, at what would be, you know, really a very late stage or you know, the end of somebody's career. It's, to me, it's an amazing story already.
It is a terrific story. And, you know, one of the things, and there's a number of trainers who are still around or who are of Wayne's age. And, you know, one of the unfortunate aspects for people like him or, you know, Ron McAnally or other, you know, trainers who are into their 80s now, they've outlived their owners.
Right.
And a lot of owners who are newer to the game don't want a trainer in their 80s, even with all the experience and success that they've had. They want someone who's more of a contemporary overall. And it's harder for them to keep clients. I mean, you know, Wayne's way down on horses compared to what he carried back in the day. But fortunately, he still has come up with a couple of good runners this year. You mentioned Ethereal Road, who's a useful, nice horse, and obviously Secret Oath is a, you know, one of the top fillies in the country right now. So, you know, to have two horses of that caliber from the numbers that he carries currently is really a terrific achievement when you consider the numbers of horses that other trainers who he's competing against carry, you know, with Asmussen, Brown, Pletcher, Baffert, you know, Diodoro. I mean, these are guys who have a lot of horses at their disposal. And Cox, you know, and guys like that who just have, you know, a lot of horses. And so for him to be in this arena is really a terrific achievement.
Well, this could have plenty of chapters, you know, yet to write, obviously. Well, and Jay, plenty of chapters on the Derby Watch trail, and looking ahead to New Orleans, of course, next week, and everything else. You know, we haven't even noted, I haven't even mentioned the Sunland Derby gets back on the agenda. Then Arkansas, Florida, UAE Derby, and so on. So we get a little breather this weekend, and then everybody better get tied on.
Yeah, exactly right. Next week we've got the Louisiana Derby and the UAE Derby on Saturday and the Sunland Derby on Sunday. And then the next weekend, Arkansas Derby, Florida Derby, and Jeff Ruby. So got 6-point scoring races over an 8-day span beginning next Saturday.
The stakes are high. Jay Pribman, DRF Pribman, everybody, Derby Watch with Jay and Marty McGee for all your, you know, for all your Derby considerations and knowledge. Jay, talk next week. I'm going to be looking forward to some opinions.
All right, Steve, take care, and make sure you get all the chores done that you neglected over the last 5.5 weeks while you were away.
Yeah, don't worry. I've been, she's
love to see the lift Tina left for you.
Yeah, the spurs are jingle, jangle, jingling. yeah, you have no idea. Jay got,
all right, my friend.
Thank you, Jay. Too funny. And Jay, you know, Jay and I were both late. Late arrivals at married life. Let's put it that way. All right, let's quickly glance. They're coming up. I think they're coming up the hill at Cheltenham, and we're going to get Steve Anderson. Here we go.
West Court with his back bin. It's State Man cruising up with Surprise Package and Colonel Mustard. West Court first, Street Bally Adam, and then behind these My Mate Mozzie and Colonel Mustard and State Man now heading on together as they approach the final flight. State Man up and over. State Man led the way. Colonel Mustard hanging left. First Street runs on well. Then West Court and Surprise Package. Oh, State Man looks ahead of the handicapper here. He's kicked two lengths clear. First Street giving chase, but not enough. State Man, too good. First Street in second, back in third, Colonel Mustard, West Cork, and Bally Adam, followed home by Felix Daisy.
Well, there you go. And let me see what kind of a price State Man went off. This was in the county handicap, and you're looking at 5-2, the 5-2 favorite. So Colonel Mustard in the stretch without the lead. For those of you that were playing Clue in the late stages, waiting for the rest of the placements, this didn't help Kev. Unable with I Like to Move It and with Broomfield Berg, neither one involved. So we'll look ahead to the third. He's going to respect Hillcrest, who'll be one of the choices, the 10, and Good Time Johnny, 16-1, the 8. So the 10 and the 8 for the Long Shot Lad in the third, and then 11:30, you'll listen to the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and Steve Anderson is going to join us, and I'll reach for Steve right now, and we'll see who his thoughts. This is one of his favorite things, as we mentioned yesterday, talking to Sean Clancy, and you know that over the years Sean has gone, and when he's there, Steve is always, you know, there we go, hold on, Steve. Steve Anderson is this is unbelievable. Try, there we go. Get the speaker up and running. Steve Anderson, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really good. I asked yesterday. Sean Clancy was with us. Normally, Sean and you would be in attendance at Cheltenham.
That's correct.
Gonna save it for next year, I guess. This year,
save it for November of this year as well.
Oh, good.
They have a nice 3-day season in the. And right, the weekend after the Breeders' Cup, typically, in which they have, pardon me, some really nice races. Not necessarily the depth of Beesfield, and obviously the full Irish participation. And it is the beginning of the season compared to the end of the season, towards the end of the season. But nonetheless, you see really, really strong racing, and you're seeing some of those horses are popping into the form of these 28 races over the last couple of days. So, yeah, a lot to look forward to, not only in the next few hours, but also in the next few weeks at Aintree and Punchestown, and then all the way into the fall. So, kind of cool.
Well, the Group 3 County Handicap ended up 15-8, 16-13. State Man, First Street, Colonel Mustard, West Cork. And we look ahead to the third, which will come up at 10:50. And this is the Bartlett Novice, and then, of course, the Gold Cup. How about a couple of opinions for the third and the fourth?
Well, the Gold Cup, real briefly with the Albert Bartlett Novices Hurdle, this is the 3-mile Novices Hurdle of the season, of the week, rather, and it looks pretty promising. Hillcrest is well-regarded, having won his last four completed races. There's also an easy case to be made for Manila Cocooner, trained by Willie Mullins, whose stable is understandably going very well right now. When you take 100 horses to 28 races, you should do well.
Hmm.
He has a 2-time winner there, and also well-regarded Hope for Ginto, who will probably be the favorite. He's the Gordon Elliott trains this Irish horse, who's won his last three. Might prefer Hillcrest myself, just of those runners. Yeah, that's in the 3-mile chase, which is, like you said, just coming up a little past the top of the hour. I'm sorry, at 10 till the hour. And then at 8:30 Pacific, it's the Gold Cup, and it's going to look like it's going to be a heavily Irish-influenced result with runners such as Al Buonfoto, who won the race in 19 and 20 against Manila Endo, and A. Plutard. Both of those two lastly named runners are trained by Henry de Bromhead. They look very nice. Galvin, trained by Gordon Elliott, won a 3-mile prep very well in Ireland a few weeks ago. And so those are kind of the four dominant runners in the 11-horse field. There's not a whole lot of money between them. A. Plutard is 5-2 right now, whilst I think Al Buonfoto is very attractive at 6.5-1, considering his course and distance success over the last 3 years, and the fact that he's had the exact same preparation now for a fourth consecutive year, and that he runs in a race at Tramore on January 1st, and then that's it. And they just wait, and they prepare him for this race. So let's see what that that comes out as. And at 6.5 to 1, that's an alternative to Galvin and Appletard, who obviously look really strong in their form as well. So the best of the British, it looks like Protectorat, a 25-length winner of a Grade 2 chase at Aintree back in December and unraced in 104 days. Looks to be a danger for the brothers, trainer Dan Skelton and his brother jockey Harry Skelton. Some very familiar silks. So those look like five of the runners of the 11-horse field that could dominate. This isn't really a sort of race with a heavy favorite like some of the other races that we've seen over the last several days. So in that regard, it's a very good betting race.
Looking forward to it. And I know that Kev, our man Kev, had, in terms of the price option, he was leaning more toward Tornado Flyer as his number.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing about this day is that the variety of the races that are being run is something that we do not see in the United States. And I'm not just talking about jump racing. I'm just talking about the variety within the jump racing. For example, we just saw a 2 mile handicap hurdle of 26 runners. Now coming up is a 3 mile novice hurdle, followed by essentially the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is what the Gold Cup is. It's the top weight for age race in the country. Now the one that follows that is another race at the same distance, about three and a quarter miles for amateur riders, and they have a field of 19, and this tends to be a rather formful race year after year because you see these horses have been in the hunt races, and they've got hunts, or they've actually been hunting or have point-to-point certificates. So in that regard, Bob and Company looks pretty good at 5-1 in a little bit later on today. Then following that, there's a rather standard 2.5 mile mare's chase, followed by a race I wish we had a little bit of this in the United States, is an apprentice's jockey stakes race. It's a handicap hurdle over 2.5 miles, and only apprentice jockeys can run it in. Now, of course, each United States circuit has like two or three apprentices, no matter what city or circuit that you follow. So in England, it's a lot easier to get 25 apprentices together for one race than it is to do that in the United States, which would require an immense amount of planning. But that just gives you an indication of the unique nature of the day in the sense that it's something that's looked upon all through the season. And, the variety of the races and the intensity of the races, since everybody is sending many of their best chances, is unique in racing in that regard. That's what made last year so hard to watch. There wasn't anybody there.
Yeah.
There were 73,000 people there yesterday. There's going to be the same number of people there today.
Unbelievable.
You can't get any more in there comfortably. Expect to get to a bar, expect to get to a betting, expect to have a good view. All the things that you take for granted when you go to the races, you can't do past 70,000 there as well. So it's just really remarkable to see the reception this year, the pent-up demand to attend racing that was lacking last year because of the stupid pandemic. So now it's nice to see the audiences.
You know, one question that I should ask, and I haven't mentioned this, the Prestbury Cup, right?
Yes.
And I lost track. I know after day two, I think Ireland was up 8-6. So I lost track of yesterday.
It was 11-10 going into today.
Wow.
So then when it was not supposed to be that close because the bookies had Ireland at 1-9. Don't you just want to rush out and spend 90 pounds to win 10? I'll knock you over on the way to the window there, Steve. It went to 12-10 after the first race today, and it is just basically a pride thing with which country can produce more winners. And, as recently as when I first started going 25 years ago in the late 90s and early 2000s, the Irish were lucky to get a one or two winner day per day. The depth of their stable really hadn't taken off, but that's emblematic of the success of Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott, and to a lesser extent, Henry de Brom had in the last several years. And as their stables have risen in prominence, so has the overall profile of the Irish trained jumper. The prize money is very good. Irish jumping is so much more popular than Irish flat racing. Just look at the attendances. Look at how much anticipation there is, like I said, towards Punchestown, a five-day festival, very similar to this one, really, in late April. Then you see, for some of the other flat racing, there's a lot of reasons for that. But the depth of the Irish barn stables over the last decade particularly has just really skyrocketed. And the British haven't really kept pace. You know, Martin Pike used to win all the races in the 1990s and the early 2000s. And when he retired, his son didn't really carry it on to the same level of success. And Paul Nichols used to be the dominant trainer in England, and he's not as strong now. In fact, Dan Skelton used to be an assistant to him, and now he's got a very good barn. So there's been a little bit of change there in that regard. So we'll just have to wait and see how that unfolds.
Well, so it feels like if they're up 12 to 10, it feels like with, what, five to run.
Five to play, and there's a lot of depth in the Irish runners, not only in the Gold Cup, but also in the handicap that I mentioned at the Infra Apprentices and the Bears Chase. Britain could easily win the Fox Hunters, which is the Bob and Company race that I mentioned a minute ago. Sorry to interrupt. And like I said, the Mares Chase and the last race looked Irish as well. So that looks like it's going to go their way, but not by the score expected. Last year it was 23 for Ireland, 5 for England. It was a baffling result. It never should be that lopsided. It always should be very close to what it is today, where it kind of comes down to the end.
And who else, you know, I know from the breeding, I see from breeding, you know, there's some French breads involved in here, but it's whoever is based, it's where they're based, essentially, and where they're
trained. Yeah, it's where whatever stable is home. You do see an incredible influence of French horses over the course of these days and in jump racing overall, and they're not all thoroughbreds, some of them are warm bloods. So it's a different, some sort of different deal there, but, you know, those are the horses that can stay 3 miles. You know, they run all day. In fact, what's funny is that during Dilmore and Saratoga, when we're all focused, understandably, on American flat racing, they start to run three-year-old jumpers in France, and every winner, it seems, comes under scrutiny for potential private purchase to be taken over to England or France, or for England and Ireland, because there's just so much interest in who could be the next young horse. Who's the one other man that could become a stakes horse at Cheltenham in 8 months?
Well, it's always fun. It's been a little bit of a tricky week because of the way the weather went south on everybody. It's kind of surprising because it looked early in the week like it was going to be, you know, it was going to be stable, and it kind of changed up. So people made some adjustments. There's been some monster prices. There's always, you know, $100 horse or two, and we'll see how things play out here over the next 3 hours, basically.
Please, you know, please don't remind me. I had secondaitis so severely yesterday with a 10-to-1 shot that got beat ahead in a 3 mile hurdle, and then in the last race, I loved the horse in the handicap chase, and he got beat by that 50-to-1 shot. And then I was thinking to myself, I don't think my luck's right today.
Well, that Hillcrest. Let's see. Well, they haven't. There's no prices yet for us until the Bartlett goes official, but Hillcrest is Steve's push in the upcoming, and then if you officially in the Gold Cup, album photo,
it looks really nice, but it's a narrow choice. I mean, Aplutard and Galvin also have very strong credentials in what looks to be a pretty good race. It's definitely going to be an exacta box type race, but one of those things where you kind of have to mark your territory narrowly because you don't want to wind up spreading yourself too thin to spoil the win. So I think that course and distance win for Al Blomfoto and the history that he has at the age of 10, he's getting a little longer and a little older for this, but this might be one more chance for him to show what he can do.
Well, to win a third and four runnings, that would put him in some pretty august circles, Steve.
Yep, very much so. Very much. Some of the nicer runners, especially, like, say, a best mate from 20 years ago.
Yeah,
like
there you go. Steve Anderson with some Cheltenham. It's one of his absolute favorite, if not your favorite thing.
It really is worth following, and very, very fortunate to find it so early. But it's, you know, again, it's just the one thing that you have about worldwide horse racing is that every country's got a little bit of a unique flavor, no matter whether you're talking about the Melbourne Cup or the Dubai World Cup or this or France's Arc and all the other different things that you can take into consideration. This is something that, you know, people say, well, this is kind of like Royal Ascot. I said, yeah, it is, but it's a different audience, and it's the countryside audience more so than anything, and it's people who've been watching these horses all winter long as opposed to all spring long. So You know, the neat thing about this is the betting is so strong. I mean, they'll handle about $800 million for 4 days if they ever would admit to how much the bookies really, really turn over. It's a staggering amount of money. And what's remarkable is that from basically, I'd say middle of November forward, every winner is mentioned in the context, every decent winner is mentioned in the context of, do you think you can do anything with Cheltenham if they already have it? Particularly with the novice hurdlers or the novice chasers, you know, can they develop into that type of horse? Can they handle the undulating course? Can they handle the uphill finish? You know, are they left-handed jumpers? Are they right-handed jumpers? You know, you want a horse that wants to run on a flat left-handed track, then you wait for Aintree in 3 weeks in Liverpool and run there instead for good money, but not as good money. Whereas here, prize money's much, much stronger, and then the competition is stronger too, because you've got to that just that much more greater Irish participation with their highly rated runners too.
Steve, this is great. I always enjoy, you know, letting you just, you know, riff on this, and we've given everybody, I think, between you and Sean Clancy and our man Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad, and Nick Luck, another great stand at Cheltenham. Let me get a couple of local West Coast topics in with you as well. And Steve, explain to everybody what is going on at Golden Gate and what this forced hiatus is going to entail.
Well, really, it doesn't affect their racing schedule at all, because the construction project and the backstretch piping system will take place a week after their current meeting ends on June 12th. And is booked to finish on the 1st of August, and they don't resume racing again until about August 24th, towards the end of the month. And during that time frame, California, Northern California racing is held in Pleasanton, Sacramento, and Santa Rosa, so they're off on the fair circuit. And this year, the fairs are pretty much having their circuit at the individual venues where they had not had that in the last 2 years because of the pandemic. Some of those meetings had been shifted back to Golden Gate Fields just simply because, like, for example, in the case of Santa Rosa, they didn't have a physical fair with the exhibits and the public displays, but they wanted to maintain their racing, so they just ran those meetings. They ran those weeks, rather, at Golden Gate. Well, that's not taking place this year. It's somewhat back to normal. So in that regard, it's time for Golden Gate to do this. They've announced that they're going to do this construction project. And in doing so, the horses that are based there will be based at Pleasanton and Sacramento through the months of most of June and all of July and a good chunk of August as well. And then those horses will go back towards Golden Gate Fields in the middle of August if everything goes accordingly, you know, in advance of the resumption of racing towards the end of that month.
Good. All right. So
it's very much of a kind of a behind-the-scenes thing. It's not really very, you know, it's more like a meeting the obligations of a you know, California laws related to sewer works and things like that. It doesn't really have a whole lot to do with the racing of horses, other than the fact that the barn area must be emptied and they cannot accommodate horses and or people for a period of time.
Very good. So they'll make arrangements. And other than that, forced pick six payout at Santa Anita.
Tomorrow.
Kind of a quiet stake weekend, right? The Irish O'Brien tomorrow. And
then on Sunday, it's the Sensational Star, which is also a hillside sprint for statebreds. And that's going to be an interesting race because it'll be Brickyard right out front and Indian Peak coming from behind to see who can handle it the best. Indian Peak was an 18-1 winner down the hill back in October. And Brickyard Ride's done so well in main track sprints, and this is something new for him. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares in this layout. But he's so versatile and quite good that it seems as if he might be able to handle that.
Excellent. All right. Well, I wanted to check in with you and not let Cheltenham end without a visit, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, we got 12 minutes to post time for the next race there, so it goes until 10:30 Pacific, so it'll even later in the middle of the day for folks listening in other parts of the United States. So it's kind of fun just to see something completely different, and this truly is a unique sports event, so it's kind of cool for those of us who appreciate very, very good horses.
Yeah, exactly, and I with Sean yesterday, in fact, while we were watching, you know, one of the, I forget which race it was, but when they go by the front side, essentially, and you pass the one big grandstand, and then, oh, there's another big grandstand, yeah. And, oh, there's a big tent. It's like, are you kidding me? And everything, I'm sure the pent-up demand here for everybody and the people internationally that show up for this, because that's what it is. I mean, it's like, for those of you that are regular Breeders' Cup attendees, you know, there's the Aussies come, and you know, they're drunk. In this case, it's the Irish that are, you know, that come for Cheltenham. Yesterday, of course, for St. Patrick's Day special, and I always put up that hysterical picture of everybody, you know, the group of Paddies dressed as leprechauns at Cheltenham.
Yes.
It's one of those things that you think to yourself, should I put this on my list? And the answer is yes.
Yeah. Well, and it's fascinating right now because I'll leave you with this. The 5 nights, Monday through Friday, to stay at the Holiday Inn Express in the town was $3,000 when I checked in November.
Jesus.
So you might want to make alternative accommodation for a more reasonable sum, but nonetheless, that just is a reflection of the demand of what they can do to charge in a small town. So it's a tough ticket in some regards, but in other ways, it's truly worth the journey, even if you just go in for a day or two and spend some time in other parts, you know, south or in the west, and then check it out. So it's really, really fascinating. So I look forward to a Gold Cup here within the hour, and high expectations that the race will live up to billing.
Always, it always does. It's one of those meets that does not disappoint. Steve Anderson, everybody, DRF Anderson with two E's. There's always make that note. Steve, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Steve Anderson, everybody, and there's our coverage. I mean, we will listen to the Gold Cup, certainly, and we're going to listen to Scott Shapiro. He's going to join us next. We'll get Shap in here and get his weekend action. And, of course, he has been following pretty closely with Oaklawn, but he, you know, certain things catch his eye in addition, and as mentioned by Steve, we're not far off.
Let's see if we see those Irish odds yet.
No. Well, there we go. There, now we do have odds. No, we do not have odds. I take that back because the county has not gone official. This is a little frustrating. Until that second goes official, we're not getting current. Let me see if I can't. I could go to, well, but Odds Checker is not going to necessarily. I mean, it gives you an idea, but it doesn't specifically tell us. So I guess we just have to wait for this to go. All right. For those that didn't hear earlier, Kev respects Hillcrest, as did Steve, the 10, and has got Good Time Johnny at 16-1 as his price in this spot. All right. Let's get Shap in here and see. You know, when I asked him last week, he didn't have any NCAA action. So we'll see if Scott's been drawn back into potentially a tourney push or two. And we say good morning, Scott Shapiro.
Good morning, Steve Vick. How are you, sir?
I'm good. We're just keeping tabs here on Cheltenham and looking forward to the Gold Cup. A little bit at the bottom of hour three. For you, how was your week past?
Everything's good, and yeah, the master of Cheltenham, Steve Anderson, he used to tell me some stories when I lived out in California about it. Definitely his favorite time of the year, it seems like. But yeah, everything's good. A very busy week, you know. We got lots of racing. Obviously, the little break in the Derby, but you know, the tournament keeps us busy and preparing for the big kind of prep season stretch run, as you and Jay Privnin were talking about starting next week.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, then let's. Sounds like maybe you do have a couple of opinions for the tourney. So we'll get around to that. But let's start. Let's start with what you're doing at Oaklawn and anywhere else.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Oaklawn today. Well, a couple thoughts on today's card. Hopefully, we can get the week, you know, the weekend bankroll started well. And race three, I thought was a little interesting. It's a conditional low-level $16,000 claimer. Number five, Lady Shaman in there is my top pick, and anywhere near 5-1, I think, worth a wager. Second start off the claim for Wayne Potts, who sports solid numbers like he does in most categories. A little higher than some of the others, though, 20% over the last 70 starts, and had an outside stalking trip. He tried using the blinkers last time, was involved early, and tired late chasing a very nice wire-to-wire winner and parking in the rear. I think second start for Potts with the blinkers should get a favorable voyage, a slight class drop. So number five, Lady Shaman, should sit a very favorable just off the pace trip, I think, in the third. Race four, pretty interesting race, Steve. A high-level optional claimer, one of their big purse races for non-stakes events, $107,000. And definitely respect Jilted Bride, but 9-5, a little short. This horse has kind of lacked that will to win. I thought should have run better than third last time out in the grade three by a co. I know that was against better, but got out kicked by a 6-1 shot, and she's all wolf. I'm going to give Beach Flower, the 9-year-old mare, a shot here for McLean Robertson. We've talked about it before. Robertson, much better second off the layoff than first off. And, you know, a 9-year-old, you could definitely understand she probably needed to shake things up, shake the rust off a little bit off the bench last time. But she ran well, Steve. She chased a good-looking winner in Little King's Princess around the track, finishing second. And, you know, ran a 85 Brisnet speed rate, whatever you're looking at, a pretty solid comeback number. And at 4-1 on the line, I think she'll be involved early. She's not a lead elite type, but she's definitely willing to take the lead if it presents itself. So Peach Flower, the veteran mare at 4-1 on the line, a little interesting.
Nice. The 4-1, actually, for Mac and Gonzalez and Lady Shaman in the third, the 5 at 5-1.
Yep, and then just one more on the card today, race seven. Probably my best play of the day. I think, I don't know if we'll get the price on number five, Motion Picture. This is a 50 N2L going a mile and a 16th. First start off the claim for Diodoro, and has really come around since getting to Oaklawn Park back at the beginning of the year. Struggled a little bit at Churchill in the one start there after moving into the hands of Ron Moquette, but has run two big races, a dominant effort over the mud to break the maiden, and then last time out, it's a pretty good group. It'll look on paper like it was a little bit lesser, 40 N2L instead of 50. But she was, he was nearly 13-1 that day. Notary was a much the best winner on the drop for the coach. And Sakil, who was a pretty good looking runner for the level, not necessarily a win machine, but puts up solid numbers. And this one ran third, maybe moved a little bit early in that race. Now takes, you know, first start for Diodoro, who's really beginning to heat up.
Scratch. It looks like he's, yeah, and it's funny.
Motion Picture's out?
Yeah, yeah. Nick.
Oh, I missed it. The late just must have just come out. I got
did.
The scratches an hour ago.
Nick McMakin just tweeted to us, and James liked Motion Picture, too.
Ah, bummer. The Twin Spires boys not going to get their play today. All right, well, we'll have to deal with the first two and then move to Saturday, I guess. That's a bummer. I wonder if they're maybe going to protect instead of they'd want to lose for a tag or something else happened.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, it sure does. All right, well, 10-race card on Saturday. There are two stakes races, which I'll talk about in a second. The Whitmore, first time being called that, but as well as the Essex. My first play of the day comes in race five, $10,000 starter allowance event at 6 furlongs. Number 10, Capping for a Dance. Fourth start off the claim for Ingrid Mason. The first two were very good efforts, I thought, including a career best effort on February 12th. And then last time out, it was a regression spot, in my opinion, and kind of ran like it, chased a real good-looking runner for the level and won for Richie around the racetrack and tired in the lane. But I think there's enough speed to the inside for this one to kind of stalk just off the early pace under Martin Garcia, and I think he can get this one home at about 6-1 on the line. I'm going to use a couple long shots underneath of number 4, Sky Scanner, and number 5, Seau. Not necessarily horses I trust to win races, but I think if the pace is honest, which it looks like it can be, Jack Van Berg and Mr. Ankeny on the inside should keep it honest. I think those two could maybe take advantage and spruce up the exacta or trifecta, passing some tiring rivals. So we'll go 10 over 4-5 in race 5. And then the 6th is one of 2 3-year-old maiden special weight events of 2 turns, and it starts the late pick 5. I like number 4, Plausible Denial, Steve. I don't know if we'll get 10-1 on the line, but this son of Pioneer the Nile ran into a good-looking horse and stayed in for half, who shipped in from Fairgrounds out of a live race that was won by Zozos. And that horse wired out the field. This horse took money right into that horse and ran pretty well at 9-5 in a 12-horse field for Jimmy DeVito. And now the $375,000 purchase stretches out to 2 turns. I think the pedigree suggests that should be to his advantage. So I think with the start under his belt, a little bit of a better draw, I think Plausible Denial, very playable anywhere near the 10-1. The favorite in there, Maasai Warrior, pretty disappointing effort on the Risen Star undercard February 19th, and lost to his stablemate 2 back on the LeCompte undercard. So I think Maasai Warrior has faced better horses and certainly is capable here, but I think he's going to get pretty hammered at the windows given that situation. So I'm willing to kind of take him on a little bit with Plausible Denial.
Well, you know, Plausible Denial, a horse that Hammer also pointed out, of course, in our first segment this morning. And you know, when we had had Jimmy DeVito with us, and we had given everybody, kind of pointed them in Plausible Denial's direction, and came running. So I think there'll be some mojo going into this, and I suppose that the Cox runner kind of fits is starting to fit a scenario that Chad Schexnader brought out when we were at Fairgrounds, when he said that, you know, when the Cox maidens, if they go, you know, about this far without breaking their maiden, that they have a tendency to become bet against. So
that totally agree with Chad.
Mean, and it's not. This horse has been okay. I don't think this is a horse you give up on. And actually, just noting that he bulleted, preparing for this. But it's a point well taken that he's already over 3 at 3-1, 9-2, and 2-1.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's not that they can't win, and it's not that you don't respect the horses, but it's the money that they take. You got the Cox name, you got the underneath finishes, you know, other horses usually in these races with either less experience or a lot of them are going to look less favorable. But some of these horses can be for barns that aren't as good with, you know, first out type runners, you know, have more upside. But again, mostly it's a value thing. They're all going to eventually find their friends when they're talented. But I agree with Chad, a very sharp handicapper in his own right. The Whitmore didn't have an overly strong opinion in here. First time calling it the Whitmore. Used to be called the Hot Spring? Is that right?
Yeah.
Hot Spring? Okay. But I landed on number 9, Hollis, Steve. This horse is a horse that does his best running when he has an outside stalking trip. And he, you know, underwhelmed last time when he was in stakes competition in the King Cotton, but he was drawn towards the inside that day. The rail was the place to be, and hopefully people will see that Bob's Edge, you know, crushed him that day, and Bob's Edge is the 5-2 favorite here, putting forth that career best effort. But he was on the outside part of the track, which was the place where you wanted to be that day on January 29th. Now they kind of swap roles, and Hollis did bounce back real nicely after that effort in the King Cotton. The 5.5 per furlong's probably a little more to his liking than the 6 that he gets today, but I think he should be good enough. And I just don't see a lot of speed signed on in here. You got Greeley and Ben and No Shirt, No Shoes, who are kind of tactical types. And Greeley and Ben is such a cool horse. He's won 12 of 13. You know, he's getting a deserving chance here at a graded stakes event for Carl Broberg, who really got off to a slow start to the meet, but man, is he heated up. Leaving his horses out right now, especially if the price is not a wise endeavor. But I think it's Hollis, and I think Greeley and Ben a little bit interesting because I just think they're going to get the jump on the Bob's Edges of the world. And Tulane Trist, who I've always been a huge fan of for Cherie DeBeau and David and Gordo, Steve. But, you know, it's going to be a test shipping in to Oaklawn. Much better competition than he faced last time, and he got a real good setup, but really took advantage of Fairgrounds at his first start of the year. If he gets pace, I think he's, you know, capable of winning on the class hike here, but I just don't know if he's going to get that early pace that he needs.
It's good. I haven't mentioned yet this morning and the fact that Nick Tamaro unable to visit today, but I should note that the Whitmore and the Essex are part of the cross-country pick five this week. And, of course, last week it was canceled after Aqueduct had to take the day off. But it starts at Tampa, the 10th. Then it comes to New York for the 8th. Then the Whitmore is the third leg. Then back to New York for the Cicada. And then back to Oaklawn for the Essex. So three stakes plus a couple of allowances at Tampa and Aqueduct, the cross-country pick five tomorrow.
Excellent. I have a play, and then my play of the day is in race 8. It's the second of those two-turn, three-year-old maiden special weight events. I like number 4, El Gamar, in here quite a bit, Steve. The son of Malibu Moon. Danny Pites is the trainer, part owner. Pites, very, very small numbers with first-time starters, and this one didn't take much money on debut back on February 21st. Got out of the gates extremely well, but man, did he finish well. And if you're a fan of gallopouts, this was a good one, a real good one, and I am a fan of them. So I think the stretch out the two turns, the experience under his belt, you know, being cranked a little bit more than he was, all lead to a big performance for El Gamar, who is 5-1 on the line, and maybe we get it. I mean, you got a major contender for Brad Cox. You got the Life on the Nile coming in off a big number, second place effort for the Dwarf. So I think we might be able to get that price.
That debut absolutely fits very nicely in here. I agree. And anything pairing up to that or moving forward a little is gonna really resonate. A good horse to point out. Absolute.
Yeah, and you can, you know, I think you can expect a pair up or better just based on the way Danny Pites works his horses. If they run well on debut, it's usually a good sign for their future. You know, it hasn't been a great meet for them, but I like this horse to run a big one. And then I'll just mention the Essex real quick. I don't have anything creative in here and don't really love anything, but, you know, the featured $500,000 race. And, man, Thomas Shelby, who I love, really liked in the Razorback, returns after the head beat or the neck beat to Plainsman. They're both in here. And then the other Cox runner, Warrior's Charge, kind of got a confidence booster running the best number of his career on the Thoroughgraph on January 28th after got a perfect trip. But Cox has freshened him up. A little bit concerned about regression, even with, I guess, about 7 weeks of rest. But I thought he ran well enough and has an affinity enough for Oaklawn Park to give him a chance to kind of spring the minor upset here. But wasn't overly creative in terms of a wagering opportunity.
This is a fun race, and I call this whole group, you know, the usual suspects. And
right.
You know, if there's a price who's got a chance to maybe make it his turn, it might be Beau Lumiere at 8-1. And you know, it feels like at some point, I think I'm pretty sure I bet him in that tinsel.
Me too.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, you know, wasn't like a wet track was going to be, you know, necessarily a problem. You know what hurt in there? Lone Rock snapped back and got us in there. But I have not done all the Oaklawn work. And it's funny because I printed the pick five for both New York and for this. And because I know I'll do the cross country, and I may end up leaning toward this, playing this pick five tomorrow. So I'll finish that work later as we get ready for. Got a big day, Scott. We've got Quinnipiac, Colgate Quinnipiac at 4 o'clock up at Lake Placid in the semis in the ECAC. And then where they probably don't have much of a shot, but Quinnipiac's like it's like playing a semi-pro team, and then we got the game at 9:50 against Wisconsin. That,
you know, so that's right. It's my alma mater versus your alma mater.
I did not realize you were a Badger. That's so
I didn't
funny.
Even think about it.
How about that? How did you end up? How did you end up in Wisconsin?
My aunt has always worked. She's worked at University of Wisconsin and lived in Madison my whole life, basically. So
wow.
That put it on my radar growing up in Philly. I always wanted to get out of the Northeast to go to school. It was, and it came down to Wisconsin and Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I went to visit Wisconsin once and got a, you know, had a little bit more of a home type experience because of my aunt working there than I did in North Carolina. And ended up there, and outside of the cold weather, I wouldn't trade going to school in Madison for any experience. But you guys should nail the three, right?
Yes. Second.
I wouldn't be shocked if you beat us.
Well, I tell you what, from your mouth to God's ears, I will tell you that right now, as implausible as this is, Colgate – and Wisconsin, right now, Colgate is on a two-matchup win streak. That includes in NCAA settings. I was on hand going back to 1990. When did you graduate?
I graduated in 96, so it was before. Wait, 1990.
1990. Wait.
We weren't in the tournament in 90, were we?
Not basketball. I'm going to tell you about hockey.
Wisconsin,
Wisconsin and Colgate met in the 1990 NCAA final, that was at Joe Louis Arena. I took the train drove down from Montreal and then took the train from Albany to Detroit, and. A tremendous tournament. We beat BU in the semis. Yeah, beat BU in the semis, and Wisconsin got very lucky beating BC. And frankly, if BC had beaten, I think it was a two to one. It might have been an overtime game, and Wisconsin got by them. If BC had beaten Wisconsin, I think Colgate beats BC, but Wisconsin. Beat us 7-4 and got up to a big early lead, 4-1 in the first period with a linesman that was just a call happy linesman that I mean the game wasn't a minute I think in the first minute he called a penalty on us and Wisconsin got a power play goal, so that was a notable matchup. But since then, Colgate women beat Wisconsin in a national semifinal in 2018, and then we got beat by Clarkson in the finals in the championship, the NCAA championship, and the volleyball team, the women's volleyball, beat Wisconsin, I think, 2 years ago. So we're on a little bit of an implausible school of 2,400 over Wisconsin, which has, I want to say, 30,000.
Yeah, we're up there. We're amongst the it's massive. So that's impressive. It sounds like we owe you one, but I'm not overly confident about this team. I haven't followed it like I have in years past in general, you know, kind of caught up a lot late, and you know, I've definitely watched a number of our games for sure, but I haven't seen Colgate play. But I don't trust the way we're playing right now. I feel like
I'll take your version of things. All right, I love it. I love it. All right, how about your NCAA opinions?
Well, I mean, in terms of a game today that I'm wagering on, I like Loyola Chicago. I don't have, you know, I've watched a lot of Big Ten. I didn't watch a lot of Loyola, but I know their brand of basketball. I just don't think Ohio State's that great of a team. It's basically a pick'em game. I think Ohio State's minus a half point right now. So that's my wager. And then in terms of the whole tournament, I don't, you know, with it starting yesterday, but I think Auburn and Tennessee are very capable. I know they're kind of that second tier of teams, and I know Kentucky lost yesterday in the SEC. I'm not too worried about that. I think these are different type teams, and Kentucky more suited for the tournament. So I'm going to be riding Auburn and Tennessee, hopefully, as long as possible, not playing the points. But, so, like I said, kind of an amateur opinion, at least compared to where I've been in years past and following it, not really part of my role with the company anymore, and kind of been unable to follow college hoops the way I used to the last couple of years. But I'm playing catch-up, and I certainly enjoy watching all these games as much as possible.
Well, Scott, I appreciate it. Scott Schapp, 34, everybody. And there's your Oaklawn look for the weekend. Enjoy. Good luck to the Badgers. I guess I'll be in the background listening to the game is in Milwaukee, so it's a home game.
Yeah,
for Wisconsin.
It's going to be a tough environment for you for sure.
Do they still play that incredibly annoying Budweiser theme song?
Yeah, that's a band staple for sure. But it's funny how, you know, to me it's not even that great of a song. When I'm, you know, it's one of those things, and it takes a lot with all the great experiences I've had, you know, with the band. You know, I love our band; they're amazing. But yeah, that's not my favorite thing. But yeah, I went to Milwaukee for the games way back. I think it was 2014 when we made our first run of the Final Four. And it's a legit home game. It's kind of unfair, but you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm not overly confident about the team, but best of luck to you. And if I lose, I'll be happy to lose to you.
I'd love hearing that. Thank you, Scott. Good luck, Scott Shapiro, everybody, and a surprise matchup. I didn't realize that he was a Wisconsin grad. How funny! Let's take a quick break. We'll come back for hour three. We need to get Jenny Reese in here because after we had the conversation with Adam Koenig about the breakage topic that was very promising, some developments are happening. And sure enough, there's some bad actors in that legislature and Kentucky citizenry. We need to get you involved here, and Jenny is going to lay out what is needed in terms of reaching out to your representatives. Back after this, Jenny Reese, then Mike Welch, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and Callie Francois. Stay with us.
The Ponce Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.